limited on item 8.0, business 8.1, consideration approval of invoices. The council has had time to approve the invoices. I'll entertain a motion.
Motion.
Mr. Adams, we have a second.
Second.
Thank you, Mr. Ware. Any questions on invoices? If not, all those in favor?
Aye.
Against? Ayes have it. Moving on to 8.2, discussion and placement of no parking signs in Miramar Drive. Mr. Stahl.
All right. We've heard already this evening some about parking signs on Church Boulevard. And again, I will give you to the extent of the history that I am aware of. When I arrived in 2005, those no parking signs were at the end of the T intersections of each of the streets in Miramar. So if you came down Shady Lawn or Oakdale or Forest or Meadow Lawn, Fairfield, there would be a no parking this side of the street sign facing you. From 2005 when I came until 2009 post Ike, I got complaints about those signs continuously. The complaint I got was that we come down to the waterfront, there's a nice bench and a palm tree and the waterfront and the grass, and there's an ugly sign staring us in the face. And so we maintain status quo. But then Ike happened, and Ike removed all the signs and the benches and the grass and part of the waterfront. Post Ike, we looked at other alternatives to putting those signs back up. And what you see here is the post Ike sign. The sign meets all of the requirements of the standard traffic device code, in that the bottom of the sign has to be 7 foot from the edge of the pavement and vertically 2 feet from the post from the edge of the travel surface to the post. And what was done is these signs were placed from each T intersection. If you made a left turn, there's no parking on the right hand side. So now that traffic, if they pull to the right, would be parking, no parking. So when you make a left turn, we went to the property, common property line of the first lot, and went directly across from it and set the sign. So the sign is not directly in front of any individual property, but is on the joint property line. And that is the case for all of those signs. By turning them sideways, then it reduced their profile. And you can see here, this one lines up with the fence line between these two properties. And made the signs less offensive to someone who's looking out from their house. They would see it at the knife's edge as opposed to flat. And this was the compromise position. So this is what it looks like from the house side. That's the distance from the street. This is a greater distance than any mailbox in the city and puts it farther off the pavement as in terms of a hazard for someone backing out or pulling over any of our mailboxes that we have. This is the view without the sign, and of course now you can imagine that sign placed back there on the center line would be behind the bench. It would also be 2 feet off the pavement. It would still be with the bottom of the sign 7 feet in the air. We had one sign that disappeared. We did not remove it. It was removed by someone and taken away just north of Meadow Lawn. And we had one sign recently that Public Works was doing the mowing at the park, and most likely it was wasps. They got into a swarm of what they described as bees, but I believe it's yellow jackets, which are ground dwellers that they stirred up, and the tractor operator ran over that sign. So we took that sign down. We ran it over first, and then we pulled it out. When that happened, the question then was raised about where to put it back up. My concern is only consistency and enforceability. We have to have signs to enforce the no parking. If we move the signs, we need to move all the signs. And I have no objection or no reason why we can't do it either way. We can put them back like they were most recently, or we can put them back at the T intersections. But I'm bringing it to council because it's a no win for me, because historically I got beat up in either position. And so I'd like some guidance. And then I'll hold the line, and I'll just say that's the way it's going to be. Either way, because that makes no difference to me. But that's why I brought it to council tonight.
Thank you, David. My understanding, so right now, we have two signs missing off the road, correct?
That's correct.
It'd be my recommendation to the council, instead of trying to place these signs tonight, is the council take time to review the street, go down Miramar, look at the different options, and then come back with a resolution proposal to make an ordinance and to set it then. That way it gives everybody enough ample time to look and see, talk to the residents, look and see what the placements are, instead of trying to just windmill it and suddenly. But that's my recommendation, council. Questions, answers? Adams?
Wheeler? That's the way it's listed as a discussion. There's not a resolution to this, so I'm good with that.
Almost now.
I agree.
Mr. Stahl, whenever installed, what is the total number of signs from one end of Miramar to the other that we will be putting up? I believe it's eight. Eight? Okay. That's my only question, sir.
Over, Jay. With that being said, I believe that's what we'll do. We'll go to the next council meeting to make a decision. That's
okay.
So residents, just bear with us so we can be clear about everything. Okay? Thank you. Moving on to item 8.3, discussion and code enforcement related to City Code Section 74311, general erection limitations, fences. That's brought up by Alderman James.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I put this on the agenda because several citizens have complained to me that the city was not enforcing the city code regarding fences. So I brought it up with Mr. Stahl, and I thought that we would just air it out here so that people can get a better idea of what the city can and can't do and what the city is and isn't doing. So these questions are to Mr. Stahl. It's not like a prosecution thing because he has them all already. I've already given to him. So just so that you can know. So Mr. Stahl, who is the enforcement officer for fence code violation?
When it's a new installation, it's the building official. He ensures that they're built in compliance. If it's built without a permit, or if it's built without a permit, then I enforce that as a zoning violation.
Who is the building official?
Building official is Latney Lamb.
Okay, the city engineer or inspector or whatever.
He's the city's building official. We have a contract with him.
Okay. How many permits for fences were issued between January 1st, 2009 and June 1st, 2015?
Well, it appears I left my cheat sheet upstairs, but my recollection is 84.
It's 81, is what you sent me. 81. Have any waivers been issued for residents to build fences that do not meet the requirements in the ordinance?
Yes.
Yes. And as you recall, there were nine. Three were denied, three were approved, one was approved but modified, and then two were for a vacant lot. Has the city initiated any enforcement actions for fences in the past 5 years?
Absolutely. It's a regular occurrence, and I would point out that of those that you listed, all of those for fencing a vacant lot were denied variances.
Okay. Do the enforcement actions require removal of the non-permitted fences after they're already up, or do they simply pay a fine?
If they meet the requirements of the code, then they pay a triple permit fee and the fence can remain. If the fence does not meet the requirements, the fence has to be removed.
Okay, and the last one. Who initiates the complaints? Citizens, police, the building official, you?
Well, ultimately they end up on my desk. A few of the complaints, very few of the complaints, come from citizens, unless a neighbor is aggrieved. The vast majority of the complaints are raised by either I see it, and more often than not, the police department sees it, and even more often than not, on a weekend, because a lot of fences that are being built, they know they need a permit, and they didn't, and so they do it on a Saturday or Sunday, and I'll get a call from the police department. On Monday, they'll get a letter from me, and we'll visit about the fence.
Okay, thank you. That's all the questions I have. If council has any other questions about fences that need to be answered, Mr. Stahl is the man.
Any questions? Moving on to item 8.4, discussion of storm drainage issues on Westview Street, South Shore, Boulevard, in the ditch southeast of Baywood Street and general discussion of drainage in the city. Once again, Alderman Jennings.
Yeah, Westview storm drainage. Resident Ron Moore brought this to the previous council and didn't receive satisfaction, so he called me. And so I went and viewed it with him. And if you could show the map that he, the drawing that he made of the from Shore Acres Boulevard down to Baywood. Yeah, it's very difficult to see from this one. But basically what you have is from Shore Acres Boulevard into Baywood, there is a hump right in the middle, not quite the middle, but about three-fifths down at Shady Lawn. Shady Lawn at Westview, when the culverts were installed, they were placed higher than Shore Acres Boulevard, the minimum at Shore Acres Boulevard. And so Mr. Moore actually went in and laser leveled this entire thing. And so, some questions for Mr. Stahl, who again has these questions, but just so that everybody's on the same page here, why were the culverts at the intersection at Shady Lawn and Westview installed at the wrong height?
Well, the question goes to, were they at the wrong height when they were installed? We have an old city with a lot of culverts, some of which span back pre-60s, and as work has been accomplished, each contractor, for a period of time, it was the contractor, would set culverts, the culvert pipes, at the flow line that they believed was correct, which many times was not. It was, and then when we started doing joint projects with Harris County on streets, which were overlays, the asphalt overlays that we have done back through the 80s and 90s and into the 2000s, those street projects included drainage only adjacent to the street. And so those would be done with what would be the correct flow line for the outfall. When you set a culvert pipe, the controlling point is the outfall, the last pipe till it hits sea level. And so those are all set in place.
You're talking now about the Baywood pit, then? That would be the last pipe on this?
Yes. Okay. In this case, it would be the Boggy Bio.
Right.
Okay. But this applies all over the city, so wherever that's at. They do that with the knowledge that at some point all the culverts between the work they're currently doing and the outfall are going to get changed at some point. Not right away. In some cases, decades. So we have a whole set that was done. And then we did all of our recent street projects. Westview is actually the first street that I did when I arrived, and it's the first concrete street that the city ever did. And we did that on a shoestring budget, and we did no drainage project with it. So that concrete street is kind of an outlier. And then Oakdale was one contract. Shady Lawn was a different contract. And so what you have is you have a whole mix. We did replace driveway approaches when we did Westview. And we did that without replacing any of the culvert pipe. Budgetary reasons. Ideally, we would have pulled all those out and reset those. That's part of what the problem is today there. I can also tell you that the city engineer looks at these things. Well, let me continue on. One of the things that we did right after Ike was look at the whole storm system in total and where we wanted to go, and we started requiring culvert permits. That was a brand new thing here, is a culvert permit. We charged $150 for a culvert permit, and before we would let you put any new pavement over a culvert, you had to get a culvert permit, and we sent the city engineer out, and he shot it and determined what the size of pipe should be and what the flow line should be. And you had to adjust yours to that correct flow if you're going to pave over it, so that we're making progress instead of retrenching. What that did is, admittedly, it caused some problems, nuisance problems, in that if your driveway was here and these two neighbors of yours have 12-inch culverts and we just came and we said yours has to be a 24 or an 18 and a different flow line, it might hold water one side or the other because you're now right and these older ones are wrong. And over time, we knew those were going to go away as we did a lot of the streets. A lot of streets removed those. We didn't want to duplicate any work. So we've been pushing forward with that. This is kind of one of those areas that got missed because Westview pavement had already been done. Again, now when we go out and we look at this, and the city engineer, since the council meeting, he and I went out and looked at it, and to rectify, I'll say 90% of this, because I'm not sure you can get to 100, and you may not want to, but would be the culverts, the three culverts. They're D culverts. They're an oblong profile under Shady Lawn. There's three there. They're the oldest, perhaps, on that run. They are at the wrong height, but there's concrete over. So for us to address the water standing in the ditch to the north would require saw cutting the concrete, removing those culverts, and installing new culverts with the proper capacity and the proper flow line. From the city engineer's perspective, that would solve a nuisance. It would not improve drainage. There's adequate storm drainage there. So it doesn't create a flooding problem, but it would eliminate a nuisance problem. And this is one of the compromises we have to work with citywide, is that our emphasis is on reducing flooding problems as opposed to nuisance problems. And sometimes even just cleaning the ditches causes them for some period of time to hold water, but we have the proper storm drainage. When it's silted in, you have nice grass across the bottom and it looks great and it doesn't hold water, but it doesn't provide the capacity, either the volume or the flow, for proper storm drainage. And so, again, this is a almost a can't win for us many times, because we improve the drainage for the storm purposes, and it creates a nuisance problem in that it holds an inch or 5 inches or 3 inches of water in this in the culvert. And we're so flat that it's very difficult to get fall that will properly drainage everything where it stays dry.
Right. I'll get back to the general drainage just a minute, but you were out with the city engineer. Did you guys come up with some sort of range of prices, estimate, or how much it would cost to fix this problem, the problem at Shady Lawn in Westview?
He was to get me a number on that. I've not seen the number yet.
Okay. But at this point, he considered it a nuisance and not a part of the city's drainage system. Oh, I'm sorry. Part of the city's drainage system, but a nuisance and not an improvement.
He looked at all the culverts from Schroeder's Boulevard to Baywood and back to Circle Park, and he did not see anything that created a storm drainage flooding issue.
Okay.
That's correct.
Ben, let me ask you a question. That section there, is that the new concrete road, correct, where that the culverts are?
Well,
you'd have to request.
Shady Lawn and Baywood are asphalt. And Oakdale is concrete. And Oakdale is a new surface. Westview is the oldest concrete surface we have in the city that's not county. I mean, the county has Church Boulevard up here, but this is our oldest one.
The culverts themselves, though, are covered with asphalt. And West, the concrete Westview is at the end on the other side of the culvert.
Correct.
And,
yes, you're right.
Yeah.
Because we never did any work there. And part of the discussion I had with him was in the costing of that, we would remove that. And if we set new culverts there, we would broaden the apron attachment where the apron approach to Westview and do it in concrete.
We
would not put asphalt back over it.
Okay, but you're going to get a price at some point from the engineer.
Yeah.
An estimate, not a price.
Actually, it's been over a week, so I had expected to have it before tonight, but I don't.
Now, as far as the city not doing any drainage improvements, can you put up the slide, the log of inspections from the 209 drainage document?
Is this what you're looking for, a maintenance schedule? Well,
that's the maintenance schedule from the document. And that there is a... Okay.
Not sure which things you're looking for here.
Yeah. The first one is the maintenance schedule that you have. Okay, that is what Public Works uses to determine what they're doing around the city, correct?
Yes, and this is really minimum. They've now gotten to the point where they do it monthly.
Right. But you do have a complete, it's called a 2009 maintenance drainage schedule.
Yes.
Okay. And do you have the log of the catch basins?
the Public Works maintains the log. They do sheets that look like this when they do the cleanings.
Right. So that's an example of what happens when the Public Works goes out and looks at the ditches, just for people that say that nothing is being done. I mean, Public Works is actually doing this and fills out these inspection forms.
Right.
And it's called for in their maintenance document.
That's correct. And this memorandum, which I don't know if you saw or not, the maintenance of our drainage system of the ditches is a component of our community rating system for our flood insurance discount. And so we have to document and report to ISO for FEMA that we're doing that. So we maintain records to show that we are doing that.
Okay. That's all I have for this one. Thank you. Anybody else has questions about drainage?
Council? Item 8.5, discussion of code enforcement related to city code section 6-206, keeping of the wild and exotic animals or livestock prohibited. Alderman Jennings.
All right. I put this one on the agenda because several citizens, not one that walks their dog, I'm not sure where that came from, but several citizens have complained to me that residents are raising chickens in their backyards, which is against the ordinance, if you look at it. They tell me that they were told the ordinance is unclear by a previous city council, and therefore no enforcement can be initiated. Again, for Mr. Stahl. And again, he has these questions in advance. So, who is the enforcement officer for this section of the code?
Any police officer of the city of Shore Acres can enforce this portion of the code, and I can.
Right. And has any city employee completed the Department of Health and Human Services Animal Control Officer training and successfully passed the state exam?
Yeah, that's that last part. Yes, only one person has.
And that would be?
That would be me.
Yeah. And is any city employee currently in the process of doing that?
Yes, I have sent three other city employees to the training. Two of those employees have left our employment since then. One has completed it and has not taken the exam.
Okay. So now the fun part. Why is the code not enforceable?
Well, the code's enforceable. The code does not prohibit the possession of chickens.
Excuse me?
The code is enforceable,
right,
to the things that it prohibits,
mm-hmm.
but it does not prohibit owning chickens.
Okay. Let's figure out why, if you'll bear with me. The ordinance specifically prohibits livestock, and fowl is included in that. And if you go under the Webster's Dictionary thing for fowl, it does include domesticated. I mean, it only includes domesticated chickens. So, please explain why the code is enforceable but not for chickens.
It does not prohibit livestock. It does not say that. It prohibits. Within the city boundaries, it shall be unlawful for any person to sell, possess, keep, permit, suffer, cause, or allow any wild animal within the corporate boundaries of the city. And that's the only prohibition in section 6-206.
Unfortunately, I don't have the entire code in front of me. Yeah, you just have the one page on here.
And I have the definitions above that.
Right, the definition of livestock, and then prohibited within in city boundaries. And then section 6-206D.
Yes.
Okay. So the bottom line is, chickens are completely allowable under city code.
You can have up to 12. We have a limit. Okay. We have a limit of birds, 12.
Okay. So, I think we cleared that up now.
No, you didn't. I don't have it with me, and I can't talk, but it does say chickens. It does say fowl.
Large fowl.
It doesn't say large fowl. It's
Back to the discussion. Your interpretation is that the code allows chickens. 12, you said.
In the absence of prohibiting chickens, chickens are allowed. and we have a section on birds, and you're limited to 12 birds.
Okay.
And I would also say this is not strictly my interpretation. I took this to the city prosecutor, Robert Richter, and I asked him if the interpretation of the only prohibited animals are wild animals, and is there anything he sees that would allow you to enforce against chickens, and he says no. So if I were to file a case for possession of chickens, the prosecutor would not accept that charge.
And that comes to the last question on this one. Has the city logged any complaints from residents pertaining to this section of code in the last 5 years?
I have received complaints from one individual about chickens in the last 5 years that I'm aware of.
Okay.
In balance, I receive almost one call a month in the last year of people asking if they can have chickens. So there's interest in having chickens.
Okay.
And I would also say, because of the issues that were raised, we do have a section in the animal code that addresses nuisances, and it does provide that the police department or animal control can inspect cages, pens, yards for sanitary conditions. And so if someone has chickens and there is a concern about a health issue related to possession and maintaining of chickens, we have the tools to go do an inspection and make sure that they're properly maintained.
Thank you.
David, let me step out one more question. We're talking about that. So my understanding, exotic animals, not wild, but exotic animals are covered. They're cleared also.
Yes. We define what an exotic is, and we define exotic and wild together. But the prohibition is just wild animals.
Okay. I was trying to cover the basics of what I'm talking about.
And I'm not quite sure entirely how we got here, but I do know that we historically have had residents who kept horses, and we had a llama for a long time that lived in the city. That was pretty common to have horses here.
Any other questions?
Winter,
winter,
kitchen dinner.
There you go.
Cock a
doodle dinner. Don't say that
around here. All right, item 8.6, discussion of code enforcement effects related to property on 105 South Country Grove. Alderman Jennings.
All right. Well, once again, although this time I personally inspected this property, as some of you may know, 105 South Country Club, Mr. Steve next door came next door to complain at the last council meeting about that property. It is a mess. So, again, questions for Mr. Stahl. As the enforcement officer, he has the questions. On the city's list of code enforcement activities on the website, this property, 105 South Country Club, is not mentioned. On the city's list of substantially damaged homes on the city's website, it's not mentioned. What enforcement activities has the city attempted on this property?
Okay. The building has popped on and off a list. The code enforcement section on the website has not been updated in recent times. There were, at one point, a large number of properties were being addressed, and it may or may not have been on that list. It is not a substantially damaged building. Substantially damaged is a legal determination for flood purposes, and it does not meet that criteria. It is a storm-damaged property. It has not been occupied as a residence since Hurricane Ike. In 2012, it had worked its way into disrepair to where, when we were doing our dangerous building inspections, in your packet, you'll see a field report determination from September 24th of 2012. And that was the first point in which that structure was determined to be a dangerous building under Chapter 10, Section 302 of the City Code. That determination is made by the building official. And that then triggered enforcement action. At that time, the owner was Carefree Management, who's the current owner, and they were accessible. And they were notified that we were going to take action if they did not do something with the property. If you turn the page over on the back, you will see that they brought in a repair and rehabilitation plan. I didn't attach the plan. It's a couple pages of things that they were going to do to the property, and they were seeking a permit to do that. On December 20th of 2012, that plan was reviewed and was approved, and work began on the property. They cleared the front of the property and removed some trees. They signed up for water service, paid a deposit, and we felt like we had forward progress to get something done. After some period of time, that forward progress stopped, and the property slipped back into its state of disrepair. It came back up again. The next page, you'll see a field report determination, this time from June 19th of 2014. And again, the building official found the building is a dangerous building as determined under Chapter 10, Section 302. That started our enforcement action again. Only at this point in 2014, we were unable to locate the owner of the property. Now, it's Carefree Management, LLC. The person we've dealt with historically on that is an officer of that corporation, and the registered agent. The corporation is defunct. That person has been difficult to find. He owned about four properties in the city. We had had other issues, and we had filed charges in municipal court, and municipal court issued warrants for his arrest. And if we can find him, then we'll have his attention, but we have not been able to find him at this point. Without a property owner or caretaker, someone who's in charge of the property, we don't have anyone to compel to make any to take action at the property. So ask your next logical question.
Yes. Under the city code, Article 5, Section 10, and you just named 302, we go 301 to 369, there is a process for condemnation, demolition, and cost recovery of public nuisance. Does the city have any plans to condemn this property and go, that might be a question for the mayor because the mayor is specifically listed in that section, but does the city have any plans to condemn that property and proceed forward?
I am not aware at this point of any plans of the city to condemn the property to move forward. I do know that this property and several other properties were discussed by prior councils. I'm not sure how many, if any of these members were present. And we looked at that, and we looked at what the legal ramifications are and what the consequences are. There is a 2011 Supreme Court case where the city of Dallas was sued for following that process that we have that virtually everybody adopted and uses in Texas, and they lost. And so it is fraught with opportunity to be sued if you exercise that, if you condemn the property, which is what would be required to do a demolition. As far as taking other actions, the city does have the ability to enter the property, to clear it, to do certain things to secure it, which is a less risky proposition than doing a demolition where you may have to pay somebody a court-determined valuation of that as a taking. However, you front all the money, you file the lien. If the property goes into a tax foreclosure, your lien falls second to the tax lien. If there's a notice of foreclosure, which in this case we don't know that there is or isn't because we wouldn't be served, but we had that experience with 902 North Country Club. If the mortgage company has provided a notice to foreclose, that's not a foreclosure, but what it does is it opens the door that any expenditure that we make and lien we file, that when they foreclose, that lien is wiped off the books. So we would be completely at risk with any money that we spent there. And then that opens multiple questions. If we went over and we cleared the property and we boarded the building up, in 2 months, it'll start to look the same. And so we'll go back in 2 months, and then we'll go back in 2 months, we'll go back 2 months. And I got a list of properties that we would have to take similar action on. It just wouldn't be right for us to take this action and make this expenditure for this block on South Country Club when we have other derelict properties in the city that also need attention. And so I don't know how council makes a decision of which neighbors get the relief and which ones don't. For a small city and larger, much larger cities are in the same box that we're in. So it's what you can afford.
So right now the city has no plans to do anything with that piece of property.
So we can find the, we can locate the owner, and then we'll prosecute to the fullest extent we can before something happens.
Yeah, I'm not inclined to spend city money on something that, well, I, as much as I'd like to see it tore down, if it's not created, it may be creating a nuisance, but yet it can be an eyesore, no doubt. But what I would prefer to see is if the city, we spend the money to put a condemnant sign out front, just as a warning to anybody, to at least be, I stay away. You know, although kids are going to be kids, people are going to be people, but I've seen things like this happen in the past, especially in regular business, and sure enough, someone owes the IRS. Everybody's going to get a piece of it before we do. And
you know, this property, the house sits back far enough that it's almost to the point where you don't notice the house is there. I'd hate to call attention that there's a structure back there for somebody.
Right. I mean, when the grass is growing up, I mean, last time I saw it was 6-7 feet high. I haven't been there.
There's no question it's in deplorable condition. There's no question about that at all. But if we're going to enter in on the private property, we have to do it following the certain steps, and there's costs associated with that.
If we do it on that one, we're going to have to do it to all of them.
Yeah.
How far behind are they in their school taxes in city taxes?
They are not. They are current on everything. And that is one of our problems.
And how are they paying that? Are they paying it with a check, or has anyone seen the instrument that they use so we can get a good address by chance?
We've had multiple addresses. and Chief Harrison here, he's run down several times. We've come up with phone numbers. Mr. Stanton attempted to purchase a piece of property or contact about purchasing property. It's hit and miss whether he responds to someone. I mean, he put signs up with a phone number to call on other. We know what other properties he owns, and so we do drive-bys because some he wants to sell. He puts a phone number up there. It's a cell phone number. Some out of the valley now, and then we go run that number down and try to find out where he's at.
Next question, do we ever become part of SETSIC?
Yes, we have a SETSIC contract.
Can we go ahead and turn in the warrants to them to see if they can't locate him on a traffic stop and then arrest him on site?
Absolutely.
Any other questions?
We do have a hold on his driver's license as well. So he's not getting his driver's license renewed, and you know we're working the angles, but SETSIC will check it out.
Okay.
Item 8.7. Alder James has got this down here as a discussion and approval of resolutions. So what we're going to do is we're going to ask for a motion. I'm going to read it out and ask for a motion so the council can then discuss it after we've got a motion and a second to discuss it instead of doing it backwards. So discussion approval resolution number 2015-147, adopting the standards required by the Government Finance Office, GFOA, to achieve the Distinguished Budget Presentation Award, requiring the budget officer to create, assemble, and present all budgets in accordance therewith, and that application be made annually to GFOA for that award. So at this time, I'm going to ask for a motion for this.
I'll make a motion.
Okay, Mr. Jennings. Do we have a second?
I'll second.
Now, okay, now we'll open it up for discussion.
All right. What this is, it's nothing hard. It's nothing. It's only a recognition that the city is doing certain things with the budget. It was brought to my attention by a citizen, Ron Hoskins, because he knew my interest in the budget. But the GFOA, they established this thing in 1984, and so there are a number of cities in Texas, 126 of them in Texas. Received this particular designation this year. What it does, it gives you a certificate to put on with your budget and gives people more confidence in the budget. It's a very nominal cost. It's the normal cost to do it. It's $370, but our city administrator happens to be a member of the Government Finance Officers Association, and so we get that cut in half. It's $185. And it's a very simple process. We're already doing most of it. But if you look in your packets, there are it's a six-page questionnaire, of what we need to do in the city to comply with it. And it basically adds another element of confidence to the city's financial picture. It's not an audit. It doesn't pretend to be an audit. Mr. Stahl can explain at length exactly what it is, but you know, he is a member of the organization. Basically, it's just a tool in the city's packet to say, hey, come look at us. And also in your packet's a list of local cities, and one was left off. Nassau Bay has also been received this designation for the past 3 years. LaPorte has done it for 25 years. Seabrook doesn't do it because they do the next level up, more comprehensive package of it, and we're not ready for that at this stage to attempt that. Deer Park has done it, but at a reduced level. So you can see all around us there are cities that do it. It's a very nominal cost. The expenditure to the city is almost nothing. And like I say, if you're an outsider looking to move into Shore Acres and you look at the budget and you see this certificate, you know right away that, you know, the city has at least accomplished the measures necessary to receive that certificate from. And it is, you know, it's not an audit, but the six pages of stuff that we submit with it is certainly reviewed by people like Mr. Stahl, who are in the organization and part of that group. So I just personally think it would be great for the city, and it just at the cost, it's just to me a no-brainer. But that's me.
Well, I'm good right now.
Michelle?
I have a question for Mr. Stahl. Mr. Stahl, are you familiar with this process? I mean, have you had experience doing this in prior cities before?
I'm familiar with the process. I have seen it done in cities. I have never seen it done in a city that doesn't have a full-time finance director. It is more onerous than I think perhaps Councilman Jennings recognizes, and it also is not automatic. You can do all of the things that are on the checklist, and as you go through the checklist, there's a number that say mandatory, and then there are about an equal number that are optional, if you will. But it goes through a review process, and every application is not accepted and granted the award by the review panel. There are aspects of it that are great and advantageous and would be good things, and there are things that are a little overshot for the size of the city that we have. I don't think I know of any city that's our size that has got this award. I think it would be wonderful. I'd rather spend my time getting our flood insurance rate reduced by working on CRS. We have a very limited staff. This really, the finance officer is the mayor, but the mayor is going to delegate, and I know what direction that goes. I know I read the material Mr. Hoskins put out, and he pointed out that Center Texas is population 6,000, and they achieved the award last year, and that's true. They have a city manager, they have an assistant city manager, they have a finance director, they have a city secretary, and they have an accounting clerk. All of those positions are me. So you're looking at all those things right here.
Well, I saw that same article, but do you remember what their sales tax was for that year also?
$1.9
million. $1.9
million,
okay.
Out of 126 cities, how many cities the size of 1,500 actually did this? Do we have a number on that?
The 126 is entities that include school districts and special districts. It's not all cities. And I did update the list and put Nassau Bay, but it didn't get into this package. But, you know, I was city manager in Nassau Bay, and I had a three-person finance staff, including a finance director. So
there's no monetary gain. This is just an award showing we have a secondary coverage on the budget. But, I mean, there's no monetary gain at all. But it is taxing. I know Alderman Jones said $370, but that's the fee. That's not the man hours that are going to be encompassed to do all this.
Well, let me note that. I'm a member of GFOAT, which is the Government Finance Officers Association of Texas, that's an affiliate of GFOA. To participate in this program, the city would have to join. The city would have to join GFOA, which they do through a member, which is my GFOA T. See, I'm super cheap, and by joining GFOA T, my membership is $60 a year. It would be $150 a year to go to GFOA, which is not hugely, you know, but that would be required to get the member rate, and it would make sense. We're already paying $60 for that if we were to do that.
I just don't see any advantage of doing this and taxing the staff that we have here to get a certificate to hang on the wall. I don't see any benefit in it whatsoever.
I'm of the same opinion as far as time consuming. Some of the surrounding cities, Baytown, Friendswood, LaPorte, League City, and Webster do have it, but their average population is about 49,121, and their average budgets are $99.4 million between those five. So, city of our size, I don't think this is necessary.
I'd like to ask Mr. Stahl one other question.
Yes, sir.
Mr. Stahl, to fill out the initial report, how many man hours do you think it's going to take to do that, number one? Second question that goes with that, after you've turned that in and we're waiting for some kind of a response or reply, what kind of man hour is it going to take throughout the year or monthly or weekly for you to continue up with the updates?
Well, the worst part is the first year. And then a large portion of it becomes boilerplate for you moving forward, unless your organization substantially changes. But it's not just my time either. This will require council to about double the amount of time they spend in workshops on the budget, because some of the mandatory elements are setting priorities and goals and refreshing that every year. And at this point, we've done the goal setting about every 5 years. It's not been an annual process. Even if we put all our resources in as staff, it's still going to require some other outside things like council participation. Just compiling and writing all of the descriptive material, I don't have a big staff to do that. Even to write the full description of what each department does, which is a requirement. Some of it's pretty simple. Putting an organizational chart, that's pretty simple. With the right software tools, indexing and table of contents are not a big deal. I haven't put a pencil to how many hours it would be, but I would really, I'd rather have this set as a goal instead of a mandate and work towards that and mark some progress that allows other things to continue to move forward and not in place of it.
Any other questions from council? Okay, motion is on the floor. For all those in favor of resolution number 2015-147, say aye.
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 All those against?
Aye.
The ayes have it. Moving on to item 8.8, discussion and approval of ordinance number 2015-182. Amending short for City Code Chapter 2, Article 2, Division 1, dash meetings to clarify, inclusion and notice of subjects to be addressed on meeting agendas. Alderman Jennings.
Yeah, basically this is to clarify the existing code, because I happened to call the mayor while he was in Jamaica or somewhere. I was embarrassed. And so the city code requires, at the current language is sort of a legacy from before the city had a city administrator. So this, the one section that I put in adds language that says or to the mayor or the city administrator for your agenda items, and that way I don't have to call him while he's on vacation. And then the other parts, Mr. Stahl just helped clean up with some of the latest Attorney General's opinion about, you heard one of them tonight when the mayor called the roll differently, stuff like that. Just cleaning up the language to making the current with law.
Thank you, Mr. James. So, my understanding, this is approval, he's on an ordinance, so Alderman Snell took a point of privilege, so we're going to give it just a minute or so for a return. Then what I'm going to do is I'll ask for a motion again. Got sidetracks.
It's too quiet in here. Let's go back and talk about the chickens. It's going to be like Key West. We're going to have chickens running everywhere.
So at this time, I'm going to ask for a motion on ordinance number 2015-182 in the city of Charlottesville, chapter 82.
I'll make a motion to approve ordinance 2015-182.
Adams, do you have a second?
I'll second.
All right, now it's open for discussion. Mr. James has already discussed. Mr. Jerome.
I'm good.
Alderman Snow.
I'm good.
Mr. Adams.
Good.
Mr. Wheeler.
I have one issue to the way this is written. Trying to make sure I'm correct on this, but this says, now therefore be ordained the City Council of the City of Shore Acres. The facts and matters set forth in preliminary ordinances are hereby found to be true and correct, and that section 2.61 of the Shore Acres City Code is hereby amended to read as follows. We've included 2.62, 2.63, 2.64, 2.67, 2.68, and 2.69. Good catch. That's multiple sections in this one ordinance. I don't believe that's quite legal.
We can modify that to read that section 2-61 through 2-69 of the Shore Acres City Code is hereby amended to read as follows. And the reality is the process that we take the full division that includes the change so that we can take care of housekeeping matters. The only changes occur in 2-66, 2-67, and 2-68, and 2-69. So it's the last four sections that have changes. One is just a housekeeping matter. 2-66, previously it said that subject matter to be discussed at all city council meetings, whether regular or special session, other than strictly routine matters, shall be posted at least 72 hours. Well, that is not in step with state law. The exception is for items of community interest, and that is defined in the government code. And so this change is strictly routine to items of community interest. And items of community interest there are defined as condolences, congratulations, notice of a social meeting, date and time, those kinds of things that are not council actions. In 2-67, availability of subject matter, previously it said the mayor and council members and the public as to the proposed action on the items. That I felt was an automatic loser. It would require us to predict what the outcome of a discussion would be for us to announce proposed action. So I propose that we change that language to read the subjects to be addressed, so that when we talk about a subject to be addressed, such as chickens, we're not predisposing what the outcome is and telling people, because it may be a different outcome and then someone might feel like they didn't get notice. So rather than say that we're proposing an action to prohibit chickens, we're just going to talk about chickens. And then in 2-68 is the one that Alderman Jennings brought forward. Previously it said that notice request is made to the mayor in time to meet the posting requirements of state law. Other sections of the code say that notice is given to the city secretary or the city clerk, and here it says the mayor. And so rather than remove the mayor from the loop, what this does is add the language that says, or the city secretary. So if you're uncomfortable telling me what you want on the agenda that I'm going to prepare, you can tell the mayor and he can tell me. And then the last one in 6-9 was on citizens' presentations, and it changed here
to the word posted to noticed, which just makes it meet what the state law says. Use the same language so they can easily approve it.
I make a motion that we amend the ordinance to read 2-61 through 2-69. That's the city of Shreveport code.
The motion to amend, we have a second.
Sorry.
Jerome on that. Okay, it's been second. Any other further questions from the council? So we're going to be voting on the amended one. So discussion be the approval order 2015-182 from 61 through 69.
Right, we're going to vote on the amendment.
Right on the amendment. Yes. That's what I'm asking the council. I'm here.
First, understand it. Yes.
Aye.
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 Got everybody?
Aye.
All those against? Ayes have. Okay, now the original one was this ordinance number 2015-182, Chapter 2, Article 2, Division 1. All those in favor of the original amendment?
Aye.
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 I'll call it next to me or not. All those against? Ayes have it. We're clear on both of those. Before I dismiss, we adjourn the meeting because we are not having another council meeting, and because of bringing up Mr. Moses and stuff, I've forgotten things during Mayor's minutes in just a moment. The 4th of July parade is going to be going on. I know we had discussed it in the last council meeting. It's not really an agenda item, it's a community active type thing. We talked about, mentioned about golf carts. Well, we come up with the idea, and I think Carl knows how I feel about this. We use a truck for the trailers in. But I actually have an idea with a small freezer that would actually keep everything frozen with the generator in the back of the truck. So we are going to do a truck for the trailer. So I would much appreciate all the council members to be there because there's a lot of walking involved. We do have shirts ordered for all the council members. I hope that they'll be in by that time.
I need sizes from a couple folks.
Okay, if y'all will give them Mr. Stahl after the meeting. But that will be a 4th of July. I believe we have to set up at 10 o'clock. So we will basically start here at the office, I guess, at 9 to go over everything, then we'll head down there. So, questions about that? Okay, bring your running shoes. Yeah. Meeting is adjourned at 9:01.